Cassette number 23, side 1, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section 2, division D, Thought and Fire Elementals, on page 955. D. In all thought building, therefore, of a high order, men have several things to do, which might be enumerated as follows. First, to purify their lower desires so that they are enabled to see clearly in the occult sense. No man has clear vision who is obsessed with his own needs, actions, and interests, and unconscious of that which is higher and of group activity. This clear vision brings about an ability to read, even if unconsciously at first, the Akashic records, and thus ascertain the point of departure for the new and incoming thought impulses, an ability to lose sight of self-interest in group interest, and thus cooperate with the plan, and a faculty that enables him to become aware of the keynote of the race and aware of the cry of humanity. Next, to secure control over the mind. This involves certain important things: a realization of the nature of the mind and brain through concentration, an understanding of the relation which should exist between the physical brain and man, the real thinker, on the physical plane, an ability gradually developed once the mind is brought under control through concentration to meditate in the occult sense and thus bring through the plan from higher levels, ascertain his individual share in the plan, and then cooperate in the work of some particular group of Nirmanakayas. Page 956. This is succeeded by a consideration of the laws of energy. A man discovers how to build a thought form of a particular quality and tone, to energize it with his own life, and thus have, on mental levels, a small creation, the child of his will, which he can use as a messenger or as a means for the manifestation of an idea. Students will do well to consider these points with care if they seek to become conscious operators. Finally, having constructed a thought form, the next thing the servant of humanity has to learn is how to send it on its mission, whatever that may be, holding it through his own vital energy in its due form, keeping it vibrating to its own measure, and eventually bringing about its destruction when it has fulfilled its mission. The average man is often the victim of his own thought forms. He constructs them, but is neither strong enough to send them out to do their work, nor wise enough to dissipate them when required. This has brought about the thick, swirling fog of half-formed, semi-vitalized forms in which 85% of the human race is surrounded. In his work as thought builder, man has to show forth the characteristics of the Logos, the great architect or builder of the universe. He has to parallel his work as the one who conceives the idea, the one who clothes the idea in matter, the one who energizes the idea and thus enables the form to preserve its outline and perform its mission, the one who, in time and space, through desire and love, directs that thought form, vitalizes it continuously until the objective is attained. Page 957. The one who, when the desired end has been accomplished, destroys or disintegrates the thought form by withdrawing his energy. Occultly, the attention is withdrawn, or the eye is no longer upon it, so that the lesser lives, which had been built into the desired form, fall away and return to the general reservoir of Deva substance. Thus, in all creative work and mental matter, man is likewise to be seen as a trinity at work. He is the creator, preserver, and destroyer. E. In all occult work in mental matter which has to manifest upon the physical plane and thus achieve objectivity, man has to work as a unit. This infers the ability, therefore, of the threefold lower man to be subordinated to the ego, so that the dynamic will of the ego may be imposed upon the physical brain. The method of the man on the physical plane who is engaged in conscious work and mental matter is to be considered in two divisions. First, the initial process of alignment with the ego so that the plan, purpose, and method of achievement may be impressed upon the physical brain, and then a secondary process in which the man, using the physical brain consciously, proceeds to carry out the plan, construct through will and purpose the necessitated form, and then, having built and energized the form, to keep his eye upon it. This is, stating occultly, the great truth back of all processes of energizing. The eye of the Lord is much referred to in the Christian Bible, and occultly understood, the eye is that which brings power to its servant, the thought form. Scientists are becoming interested in the power of the human eye, and that faculty of control and of recognition, which is everywhere seen as existing, will have its scientific and occult explanation when it is studied as an instrument of initiatory energy. Page 958. Therefore, it will be apparent that a thought form is the result of two types of energy, that emanating in the first instance from the ego on abstract levels, that originating in a secondary sense from the man on the physical plane through the medium of the brain. That men do not recognize the first factor as a general rule is that which is responsible for much that is evil. When the science of the self has assumed due proportions, men will be careful to ascertain the egoic impulses in all thought process, and to utilize true egoic energy before they begin manipulating deva substance and building forms of deva lives. 2. Thought form building in the three worlds. I have a few more words to say anent this subject of man as a creator in mental matter. The words are addressed to all those students who, through their ability to concentrate, have developed a certain measure of thought control, and who desire to understand the process of creation with greater scientific accuracy. We will therefore consider two factors in the process of thought form building: A. That of aligning with the ego. B. The process of impressing the egoic will on the physical brain, or, to word it otherwise, the initial utilization of egoic energy. Page 959. Let us take them one by one. A. Alignment with the ego. This, as we know, is only possible to the man who has reached the probationary path, or a certain very definite point in evolution. Through knowledge and practice, the power has been acquired of automatically and scientifically utilizing the sutratma, or channel, as a means of contact. When to this ability is added that of utilizing with equal ease the antaskarana, or bridge between the triad and the personality, then we have a powerful agent of the hierarchy on the earth. We might generalize in the following manner as to the stages of growth and consequent ability to become the agent of ever-increasing powers, tapping the resources of dynamic energy in the three worlds. Lower types of humanity use the sutratma as it passes through the etheric body. Average men utilize almost entirely that part of the sutratma which passes through the astral plane. Their reactions are largely based on desire and are emotional. Intellectual men utilize the sutratma as it passes through the lower levels of the mental plane, down through the astral to the physical in its two sections. Their activities are energized by mind and not by desire, as in the earlier cases. Aspirants on the physical plane use the sutratma as it passes through the two lower subplanes of the abstract levels of the mental plane, and are beginning gradually to build the antaskarana, or the bridge between the triad and the personality. The power of the ego can begin to make itself felt. Applicants for initiation and initiates up to the third initiation use both the sutratma and the antaskarana, employing them as a unit. The power of the triad begins to pour through, thus energizing all human activities upon the physical plane, and vitalizing in ever-increasing degree the man's thought forms. The key to the formation of the Maya Virupa is found in the right comprehension of the process. Page 960. If students will study carefully the above differentiations, much light will be thrown upon the quality of the energy employed in thought form building. In the early stages of alignment, it has to be concisely and carefully brought about through concentration and meditation. Later, when the right rhythm has been set up in the bodies and the purification of the sheaths has been rigidly pursued, the dual activity will become practically instantaneous, and the student can then turn his attention to the work of conscious building and vitalization. His point of concentration will not then be given to the attainment of alignment. Accurate alignment entails mental quiescence or stable vibration, emotional stability resulting in limpid reflection, etheric poise producing a condition in the head center which would permit of the direct application of force to the physical brain via the center. B. Physical brain impression. The accurate realization by the physical brain of what the ego is seeking to convey concerning the work to be done only becomes possible when two things are realized. Direct alignment, the transmission of the egoic energy or will to one or other of the three physical centers in the head, the pineal gland, the pituitary body, the alter major center, or that nerve center at the top of the spine where the cranium and the spine make approximate contact. When this congeries of nerves is fully developed, it forms a center of communication between the vital energy of the spinal column, the kundalini fire, and the energy of the two head centers above enumerated. It is the physical correspondence to the antaskarana on higher levels. Page 961 is a chart entitled The Science of Meditation. Page 962. The pituitary body, in all cases of correct normal development, forms the center which receives the threefold vitalization pouring through the satratma from the lower mental, the astral, and the etheric planes. The pineal gland comes into activity when this action is enhanced by the pouring through of energy from the ego on its own plane. When the antaskarana is in process of utilization, the alter major center is likewise employed, and the three physical head centers begin to work as a unit, thus forming a kind of triangle. By the time the third initiation is reached, this triangle is fully awakened, and the fire or energy is circulated freely. It will be apparent, therefore, that man's ability to create in mental matter grows as he treads the path. He needs to remember that, from the angle from which we are studying, we are not considering the power of the ego to produce forms on the mental plane, but the ability of physical plane man to create upon the mental plane those vehicles for energy which, when set in motion by his conscious will produce certain specific effects upon the physical plane. This is brought about by egoic energy passed down the sutratma to the physical brain, and retransmitted back to the mental plane, plus or minus that which has been gained or lost in the process. The true adept, through knowledge, conserves all energy while in process of transmission, and augments it with the energy contacted. It is therefore the energy of will plus that of desire, fed by the energy of the physical brain. Literally, therefore, it is a small resume of the creative process of the Godhead, being the energy of the three persons unified and considered from the standpoint of the physical. Page 963. It is the at-one-ment of the three fires in man, being in fact A, that much of the fire of spirit or electric fire which any particular ego is embodying, relatively little prior to the third initiation, or is able to transmit, coupled with B, that much of the fire of the solar angel, solar fire, or the egoic aspect which the ego is able to transmit. This is but little in average man, a good deal in the man on the probationary path, and a full downpour by the time the third initiation is reached. C, that much of the fire of substance in its purified state, which can penetrate. This is dependent upon the purity of the three sheaths, and in the case of a highly advanced man is the kundalinic fire as it swells the blaze produced by the other two. When therefore the alignment is corrected and the physical head centers are awakening, it becomes possible for man to become a conscious creator in mental matter. Roman numeral 4. Man and the fire spirits or builders. This section we will consider in somewhat greater detail than the previous one, as it concerns much of present practical value to man. This will be seen particularly as we study the effects of speech and the occult significance of the spoken word. 1. The will aspect and creation. In a previous division, we dealt somewhat with the transmission of the will of the ego to the physical brain, and we saw how only in those persons who, through evolutionary development, had the sutratma and the antaskarana connected, and whose three physical head centers were more or less awakened, was the will of the ego capable of transmission. In the other cases, such as the average man and little developed man, the purpose affecting the physical brain emanated from the astral or lower mental levels, and was therefore more likely to be the impulse of some lunar lord, even if of a higher order, than the divine will of the solar angel who is the true man. Page 964. A. The condition of the magician. It is of value to remember that when the physical head centers are awakened through alignment of the etheric centers, we have the very lowest aspect of egoic influence. From these three centers, man on the probationary path and up to the third initiation directs and controls his sheath, and from them spreads that illumination which will irradiate the physical plane life. By the time the third initiation is reached, the internal triangle is in full process of circulatory transmission, and the whole life of the personality is subjected to the will of the ego. The star absorbs the light of the moon so that the rays of the sun may be reflected back, is the occult way of expressing the truth anent this point in evolution. It might be of value here also to point out the condition of the etheric centers during this process of direct solar control. Before the three physical head centers awaken, man is largely subjected to force flowing through the four minor etheric centers. Later, the three major centers, the head, the heart, and the throat, begin to vibrate, gradually assuming a greater sweep of activity, till their energy tends to negate that of the lower centers, to absorb their vitality and deflect the direction of their vitality, until the three higher wheels are in full fourth-dimensional activity. As this proceeds, the three physical head centers begin to awake from dormancy into activity, the effect being felt as follows. A. As the major head center awakens, the pineal gland begins to function. B. As the heart center becomes fully alive, the pituitary body enters into activity. C. As the throat center assumes its right place in the process of evolution, the alter major center vibrates adequately. Page 965. When the triangle of force that these three physical centers form is in circulatory effect, the greater triangle can be seen in circulation. It then becomes a wheel turning upon itself. The major etheric centers are in full action, and the man is nearing the moment of liberation. In the work of creation, as occultly carried on, all these three physical centers have to be utilized, and from a consideration of the subject, it will become apparent why it has been necessary to deal with them in this order. By means of the pineal gland, the organ of spiritual perception, man ascertains the will and purpose of the ego, and from thence he draws the necessary energy from the higher levels via the head center and the sutratma. Footnote. The pineal gland, the third eye. 1. Goal of evolution to develop the inner vision. 2. The occult significance of the eye. 3. The eye of Taurus the bull. The constellation of Taurus was called the mother of revelation and the interpreter of the divine voice. 4. The organs of inner vision, A. The exoteric organ, pineal gland, physical, B. The esoteric organ, the third eye, etheric. Note, students must be careful to distinguish between the third eye and the pineal gland. The third eye is dead and acts no longer. It was left behind a witness to its existence in the pineal gland. 5. The pineal gland is a small pea-like mass of gray nervous matter attached to the back of the third ventricle of the brain. 6. The pituitary body stands to the pineal gland as manas does to buddhi, or mind, to wisdom. 7. The pineal gland reached its highest development proportionately with the lowest physical development. 8. The third eye exists in etheric matter, A, in front of the head, B, on a level with the eyes. 9. It is an energy center formed by a triangle of force, A, the pituitary body, B, the pineal gland, C, the outer major center. 10. The opened or third eye does not convey direct clairvoyance, but is the organ through which direct and certain knowledge is obtained. A. The initiate directs the eye towards the essence of things. B. The third eye must be acquired by the ascetic before he becomes an adept. 11. Students of occultism ought to know that the third eye is indissolubly connected with karma. A. From its Atlantean past, the fifth root race is working out fourth root race causes. B. Because it reveals that which is its past. 12. The third eye is the mirror of the soul. 13. To the inner spiritual eye, the gods are no more abstractions than our soul and body are to us. A. The inner eye can see through the veil of matter. B. The spiritual eye reveals the supersensual states. 14. In the spiritual regenerated man, the third eye is active. From The Secret Doctrine, Volumes 1, 2, and 3. Return to text. Page 966. By means of the pituitary body, the second element of desire, or of the form-building energy, becomes available, and under the law of attraction, he can mold and build in deva substance. When the outer major center, the synthesis of what might be called nervous energy, is awake, it becomes possible for him to materialize and activate the desired form, which, through attractive energy, he is in process of constructing. It will be apparent, therefore, why it is that so few people ever construct thought forms which are of constructive, lasting benefit to humanity, and also why it is that the great ones, as they work through their disciples, are forced to work with groups, being seldom able to find a man or a woman whose three physical head centers are simultaneously active. They frequently have to work with large groups before the quota of energy supplied to them for the accomplishment of their ends measures up to that necessitated. It will be obvious, likewise, that the disciple's power for service for humanity is dependent largely upon three things: A. The state of his bodies and their egoic alignment. B. The condition of activity present in the physical head centers. C. The circulatory action of the triangular transmission of force. Page 967. These factors are again dependent upon others, among which might be enumerated 1. The ability of the disciple to meditate. 2. The capacity he displays for bringing through accurately from the subtler levels the plans and purposes of which his ego is cognizant. 3. The purity of his motives. 4. His power to hold a state of meditation, and while in that state, begin to build the form for his idea, and thus materialize the plan of his ego. 5. The amount of energy he can pour later into his thought form, and thus procure for it a period of existence, or its tiny day of Brahma. These subsidiary factors are again dependent upon A. His place on the ladder of evolution, B. The condition of his bodies, C. His karmic condition, D. The tenuosity of the etheric web, E. The caliber of his physical body and its relative refinement. It is necessary here to warn the student against the error of making any hard or fast rule anent the sequential order of the development of the physical head centers and the vitalization of the force centers. This process is incident upon many things, such as the ray upon which the monad may be found, and the nature of the development in the past incarnations. Nature, in all departments of her corporate life, parallels her efforts and overlaps her various processes, and it takes a seer of vast wisdom and experience to state exactly the stage at which any particular unit of the human family may be. He that is wise always refrains from assertion until he knows. Page 968. Let us now consider B, the construction, vitalization, and actuating of the thought form. The ego, having brought about a condition of receptivity or of recognition in the physical brain of the man, and having drawn from him the necessary response, the process of building is thereupon begun. This process of physical plane response is based, as is all else in nature, upon the relation of the polar opposites. The physical centers are receptive to the positive influence of the force centers. The physical brain is responsive to the positive influence of the lower nature in the earlier evolutionary stages, or to the reactions of the substance of the sheaths, the impress of the lunar lords. It responds in the later stages to the positive influence of the ego, or the impress of the solar lord. As is apparent, this building process is divided into three parts, which overlap and assume an appearance of simultaneity. When, as is the case with the majority of the human family, the process is an unconscious one, produced by reflex action and based largely on the accomplishment of desire, all is carried on with great rapidity and leads to rapid results. These results being effective of accomplishment according to the ability of the man to vitalize and hold in coherent form his idea. Most of the thought forms created by average man are only relatively effective, and this within great limitations and having but a restricted radius. When man is learning consciously to create, which he does through the organization of thought, concentration, and meditation, he proceeds more slowly, for he has two primary things to do before the creative process can be carried through. A. To contact or communicate with the ego or solar angel. B. To study the process of creation and to make it conform step by step with natural evolutionary law. Page 969. The above is necessarily but another way of defining meditation and its objective. Later on, when a man is an expert in meditation, the work of thought creation proceeds with ever-increasing rapidity until he surpasses, on a higher turn of the spiral, the activity of the earlier unconscious period. Starting, therefore, with the recognition of the egoic intent in the physical brain, the man proceeds to build the form for his idea. He begins first to organize the material required upon the mental plane. It is on that plane that the impulse takes to itself its primary form. On the desire or astral plane, the process of vitalization is largely pursued, for the length of the life of any thought form, even such an one as our solar system, is dependent upon the persistence of desire and the strength of the desire. On the etheric levels of the physical plane, the process of physical concretion takes place. As the physical vehicle assumes the necessary proportions, the thought form becomes divorced from the one who is giving it form. Any idea of enough strength will inevitably materialize in dense physical matter. But the main work of its creator ceases when he has worked with it on mental, astral, and etheric levels. The dense physical response is automatic and inevitable. Some ideas of a large and important nature, which have arisen in the consciousness of the guides of the race, reach full manifestation only through the medium of many agents and the dynamic impulses of many minds. A few work consciously, when this is the case, at the production of the necessitated form. Many more are swept into activity and lend their aid through the very negativity of their natures. They are forced to be interested in spite of themselves and are swept into the movement, not through any mental apprehension or vital desire, but because it is the thing to do. Page 970. In this may be seen an instance of the ability of the great ones to utilize conditions of apparent inertia and negativity due to little development, and thus produce good results. We will here only deal with the man who is learning consciously to build, and will not consider the process as pursued by the adept or the chaotic attempts of the little evolved. Having grasped the idea, and having with care discriminated the motive underlying the idea, thus ascertaining its utilitarian purposes and its value to the group in the service of humanity, the man has certain things to do which, for the sake of clarity, we might sum up in certain statements. He has, first of all, to hold the idea sufficiently long for it to be faithfully registered in the physical brain. Frequently the ego will get through to the brain some concept, some portion of the plan, and yet will have to repeat the process continuously over quite a long period before the physical response is such that the solar angel can rest assured that it is intelligently registered and recorded. It is perhaps unnecessary to say that the entire process is greatly facilitated if the shadow, or the man, pursues regular meditation, cultivates the habit of a daily and hourly recollectedness of the higher self, and, before retiring at night, endeavors to hold the thought of bringing through at the time of awakening as much as possible of any egoic impress. When the reaction between the two factors, the ego and the receptive physical brain, is established, the interplay is reciprocal, and the two are keyed or tuned to each other. The second stage is entered upon. The idea is conceived. Page 971. A period of gestation is then pursued, itself divided into various stages. The man broods over the idea. He ponders upon it, thereby setting up activity in mental matter, and attracting to his germ thought the material necessary for its clothing. He pictures to himself the contour of the thought form, clothing it with color and painting in its details. Hence will be seen the great value of a true imagination and its ordered scientific use. Imagination is karma manasic in origin, being neither pure desire nor pure mind, and is a purely human product, being superseded by the intuition in perfected men and in the higher intelligences of nature. When his will or the initial impulse is sufficiently strong, and when the imagination or power of visualization is adequately vivid, the second part of the gestation period is entered upon, and the vitalization by desire is begun. The interplay of mental impulse and desire produce what might be called a pulsation in the organizing form of the idea, and it becomes alive. It is yet but nebulous, and its tenuosity is great, but it shows signs of organization and the outline of its form. Students must remember that this entire process is being carried on now during this stage, which we are considering from within the brain. There is thus a definite correspondence to the work of the nine Sephiroth. The initial three correspond to the egoic impulse with which we have earlier dealt. The secondary group of Sephiroth find their analogy in the work pursued in the stage we are now dealing with, or the impulse of mind desire emanating consciously from man's brain. The work of the final three is accomplished when the thought form, being clothed in mental and astral matter, passes into objectivity on the physical plane. Page 972. A later stage in the gestation period is pursued when the thought form, being clothed in mental matter and having become vitalized by desire, takes to itself a layer of substance of astral matter and is consequently enabled to function on the astral plane as well as the mental. Here its growth is rapid. It should be carefully borne in mind that the process of building in mental matter proceeds simultaneously and that the development is now twofold. Here the conscious builder must be careful to hold the balance and not to let imagination unduly assume too large proportions. The monastic element and the karmic element must be justly proportioned, or else will be seen that too common manifestation, an idea wrongly conceived and nurtured, and therefore impossible of playing its just part in the evolutionary plan, being but a grotesque distortion. The idea now is reaching a critical stage and should be ready for the assumption of physical matter and to take to itself an etheric form. When on etheric levels it receives that final impulse which will lead to what may be called its actuating, or its reception of that motivating impulse which will lead to its dissociation from its originator, and the sending out to assume, 1, a dense form, 2, a separate existence. It should be remembered that the thought form has now passed from the mental plane, taken to itself an astral sheath, and likewise is gathering to itself a body of etheric matter. When it has reached this stage, its vitalization is proceeding apace, and the hour of its separated existence is drawing near. This vitalization is consciously carried out by the man who, according to the original intent or initial impulse, directs to the thought form energy of some kind. This energy is directed from one or other of the three higher centers according to the quality of the embodied idea, and will be seen pouring towards the rapidly objectivizing idea from the particular center involved. Page 973. We must not forget that we are considering the thought form of the conscious builder. The thought forms of the majority of human beings are energized from no such high source, but find their active impulse emanating from either the solar plexus or the still lower organs of generation. It is this constant stream of emotional or sexual energy which is responsible for the chaotic conditions of the present. The balance is not preserved. The interaction between the two and the myriads of thought forms consequently produced of a low order and vibration are producing a condition which is going to require all the efforts of mental workers eventually to negate, offset, and transmute. These forms, which scarce merit the prefix thought, being largely karmic with an admixture of the lowest grade of mental matter, are responsible for the heavy, slow, vibrating, or pulsating fog or cloak which envelops the human family and which produces much of the present evil, crime, and mental lethargy. People are mainly polarized in the astral body, as we know, and the lower centers are the most active. When an atmosphere or environment of thought forms of a low key and vitalized by all the baser forms of astral energy is coupled to this, it will become apparent how stupendous is the task of lifting humanity to a clearer, purer, and better atmosphere, and how easy it is for the lower aspects and appetites to flourish and to grow. As the vitalization is pursued and the energy is poured from one or other of the centers into the thought form, the conscious builder begins to extend this influence in order to send it forth from him to perform its mission, whatever that may be, to make it occultly radiant so that its vibrations will emanate and make themselves felt, and finally to make it magnetic so that something in the thought form will call forth response from other thought forms or from the minds it may contact. Page 974. When these three objectives have been reached, the life of the form itself is now so strong that it can pursue its own little life cycle and fulfill its work, being only linked to its creator by a tiny thread of radiant substance which is a correspondence to the Sutratma. All forms have such a Sutratma. It links a man's bodies to the inner identity or to that magnetic current which, emanating from the true identity, the solar logos, connects the creator of the solar system with his great thought form by a stream of energy from the central spiritual sun to a point in the center of the physical sun. As long as the attention of the creator of any thought form, great or small, is turned towards it, that magnetic link persists. The thought form is vitalized and its work carried on. When the work has been accomplished and the thought form has served its purpose, every creator, consciously or unconsciously, turns his attention elsewhere and his thought form disintegrates. Hence the occult significance of all the processes occultly involved in sight can be seen. As long as the eye of the creator is upon that which is created, just so long does it persist. Let the creator withdraw the light of his countenance, and the death of the thought form ensues, for vitality or energy follows the line of the eye. When, therefore, a man in meditation considers his work and builds his thought form for service, he is occultly looking and consequently energizing. He begins to use the third eye in its secondary aspect. The third or spiritual eye has several functions. Amongst others, it is the organ of illumination, the unveiled eye of the soul, through which light and illumination comes into the mind, and thus the entire lower life becomes irradiated. It is also the organ through which pours the directing energy which streams out from the conscious creating adept to the instruments of service, his thought forms. Page 975. The little evolved do not, of course, employ the third eye for the stimulating of their thought forms. The energy used by them, in the majority of cases, originates in the solar plexus and works in two directions, either via the organs of generation or through the physical eyes. In many people, these three points, the lower organs, the solar plexus, and the physical eyes, form a triangle of force, around which the stream of energy flows before going out to the objectivized thought form. In the aspirant and the man who is intellectual, the triangle may be from the solar plexus to the throat center and thence to the eyes. Later, as the aspirant grows in knowledge and purity of motive, the triangle of energy will have the heart for its lowest point instead of the solar plexus, and the third eye will begin to do its work, though as yet very imperfectly. Just as long as the eye is directed to the created form, the current of force will be transmitted to it, and the more one-pointed the man may be, the more this energy will be centralized and effective. Much of the ineffectiveness of people is due to the fact that their interests are not centralized, but very diffuse, and no one thing engrosses their attention. They scatter their energy and are attempting to satisfy every wandering desire, and to dabble in everything which comes their way. Therefore, no thought they think ever assumes a proper form or is ever duly energized. They are consequently surrounded by a dense cloud of half-formed disintegrating thought forms and clouds of partially energized matter in process of dissolution. This produces occultly a condition similar to the decay of a physical form and is equally unpleasant and unwholesome. It accounts for much of the diseased condition of the human family at this time. Failure in thought creation is due also to the fact that the laws of thought are not taught, and men do not know how, through meditation, to create those children of their activity to carry on their work. Page 976. Results on the physical plane are much more quickly achieved through scientific thought creation than through the directly physical plane means. This is becoming more realized, but until the race has reached a point of greater purity and unselfishness, the more detailed explanation of the process must necessarily be withheld. Another reason for creative ineffectiveness is owing to the currents which emanate from the majority of people being of such a low order that the thought forms never reach the point of independent action except through cumulative group work. Until matter of the three higher subplanes of the astral and physical planes finds its place in the thought form, it has to be energized principally by mob energy. When the higher substance begins to find its way into the form, then it can be seen acting independently, for the individual ego of the man concerned can begin to work through the matter, a thing before impossible. The ego cannot work freely in the personality until third subplane matter is found in his bodies. The correspondence consequently holds good. Once the thought form has been vitalized and its etheric form is completed or sealed, as it is called, it can attain the dense physical form if desired. This does not mean that the individual thought forms of every man take dense substance upon the etheric, but they will eventuate in activity upon the physical plane. A man, for instance, is thinking a kindly thought. He has built it up and vitalized it. It is objective to the clairvoyant and exists in etheric matter close to the man. It will therefore find physical expression in an act of kindness or a physical caress. When the act is over, the caress consummated, the interest of the man in that particular thought form fades out and it dies. Similarly with a crime. The thought form has been built up and inevitably it will find its physical expression in some deed of one kind or another. Page 977. All activity of every kind is the result A. of thought forms built consciously or unconsciously, B. of self-initiated thought forms or of the effect of the thought forms of others, C. Of responsiveness to one's own inner impulses, or of responsiveness to the impulses of others, and therefore to group thought forms. It will be apparent, therefore, how vital is this matter, and how influenced men and women are by the thought forms they themselves create, or the mental children of other men. End aside 1, cassette number 23, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 977. Continued on side 2. Side 2, cassette number 23, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section 2, division D, Thought and Fire Elementals, on page 977. C, the occult significance of speech. The old scripture saith, quote, in the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, close quote, from the Bible, Proverbs 10, verse 19, because in a tide of words at this stage of man's evolution, many are spoken purposely or from motives which, when analyzed, will be found to be based purely in the personality. The greater the progress that is made along the path of approach to the mysteries, the greater the care that must be taken by the aspirant. This is necessary for three reasons. First, owing to his stage in evolution, he is able to enforce his words in a manner which would surprise him could he but see on the mental plane. He builds more accurately than the average man, his subsequent thought form is more strongly vitalized, and it performs the function whereon it is sent by the sound or speech with greater precision. Second, any word spoken and consequent thought form built, unless along the higher path and not based on personality impulses, is apt to cause a barrier of mental matter between a man and his goal. This matter, or separating wall, has to be dissipated before further advance can be made, and this process is karmic and unavoidable. Page 978. Third, speech is very largely a mode of communication on the physical levels. On the subtler levels, whereon the worker stands, and in his communications with his fellow workers and chosen cooperators, it will play an ever-lessening part. Intuitive perception and telepathic interplay will distinguish the intercourse between aspirants and disciples, and when this is coupled with a full trust, sympathy, and united effort for the plan, we will have a formation wherewith the master can work and through which he can pour his force. The master works through groups, large or small, and the work is facilitated for them if the interplay between units of the group is steady and uninterrupted. One of the most frequent causes of difficulty in group work, and consequent arrest of the inflow of force from the master temporarily, is based on misuse of speech. It brings about a clogging of the channel for the time being on the mental plane. I mention these three factors, for this question of group work is of vital importance, and much is hoped from it in these days. If, in any organization on the physical plane, the masters can get a nucleus of even three people who mutually interact, I choose the word deliberately, and who disinterestedly follow the path of service, they can produce more definite results in a shorter space of time than is possible with a large and active body of people who may be sincere and earnest, but do not know the meaning of trust in and cooperation with each other, and who guard not the gate of speech. If a man succeeds in understanding the significance of speech, if he learns how to speak, when to speak, what is gained by speech, and what happens when he speaks, he is well on the way to achieving his goal. The person who regulates his speech rightly is the person who is going to make the most progress. Page 979. This has ever been realized by all leaders of occult movements. That most occult order of Pythagoras at Crotona and many other of the esoteric schools in Europe and Asia had a rule that all neophytes and probationers were not permitted to speak for 2 years after entering the school, and when they had learned to keep silence for that period, they were given the right to speak, for they had learned a specific reticence. It might be of value here if students realize that every good speaker is doing a most occult work. A good lecturer, for instance, is one who is doing work that is analogous, on a small scale, to that done by the Solar Logos. What did he do? He thought, he built, he vitalized. A lecturer, therefore, segregates the material with which he is going to build his lecture and which he is going to vitalize. Out of all the thought matter of the world, he gathers together the substance which he individually seeks to use. Next, he copies the work of the second logos in wisely building it into form. He constructs the form, and then, when it is constructed, he finishes up by playing the part of the first person of the Trinity, putting his spirit, vitality, and force into it, so that it is a vibrant, living manifestation. When a lecturer or speaker of any kind can accomplish that, he can always hold his audience, and his audience will always learn from him. They will recognize that which the thought form is intended to convey. In everyday life, when the student speaks, he is doing just the same thing, only the trouble frequently arises that in his speech he constructs something that is usually not worthwhile and vitalizes it with the wrong kind of energy, so that the form, instead of being a constructive, vital, helpful force, is a destructive one in the world. If we study the various cosmologies of the world, we shall see that the process of creation was carried on by the means of sound or speech, or the word. Page 980. We have it in the Christian Bible, quote, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made." Close quote. Thus, according to the Christian teaching, the worlds were made by the Word of God. In the Hindu scriptures, we will find that the Lord Vishnu, who stands for the second person of the Trinity, is called the Voice. He is the great singer who has built the worlds and the universe by his song. He is the revealer of the thought of God who has constructed the universe of solar systems. Just as the Christian speaks about the great Word, the Word of God, the Christ, so the Hindu speaks of Vishnu, the great singer, creating by means of his song. In physical plane manifestation, we are known by our speech. We are known by our reticence, by the things we say and by the things we leave unsaid, and are judged by the quality of our conversation. We think of people in terms of what they say, because their words disclose the type of thought matter in which they work, and the quality of energy or life which they put behind their words. To the various solar logoi of the vast constellations that are apparent when we scan the starry heavens, the quality of the logos of our solar system is seen through the medium of that great thought form he has built by the power of his speech, and which is energized by his particular quality of love. When God speaks, the worlds are made, and at this present time he is only in process of speaking. He has not yet concluded what he has to say, and hence the present apparent imperfection. When that great divine phrase or sentence which occupies his thought is brought to a close, we will have a perfect solar system inhabited by perfect existences. Page 981. Through speech, a thought is evoked and becomes present. It is brought out of abstraction and out of a nebulous condition and materialized upon the physical plane, producing, could we but see it, something very definite on etheric levels. Objective manifestation is produced, for things are that which the word makes them in naming them. Speech is literally a great magical force, and the adepts or white magicians, through knowledge of the forces and power of silence and of speech, can produce effects upon the physical plane. As we well know, there is a branch of magical work which consists in the utilization of this knowledge in the form of words of power, and of those mantrams and formulae which set in motion the hidden energies of nature and call the devas to their work. Speech is one of the keys which opens the doors of communication between men and subtler beings. It gives the clue to the discovery of those entities who are contacted on the other side of the veil. But only he who has learned to keep silent and has arrived at the knowledge of the times to speak can pass this veil and make certain esoteric contacts. Magic consists, we are told in the secret doctrine, in addressing the gods in their own language. Therefore, the speech of average man cannot reach them. Therefore, those who seek to learn the occult language, those who yearn to become aware of the words which will penetrate to the ears of those who stand on the other side, and those who seek to utilize the formulae and phrases which will give them power over the builders, have to unlearn their previous use of words and to refrain from ordinary methods of talking. Then the new language will be theirs, and the new expressions, words, mantrams, and formulas will be entrusted to their care. Page 982. The laws of speech are the laws of matter, and students can apply the laws governing physical plane substance to their use of words, for it concerns the manipulation of matter on other levels. Speech is the great medium whereby we make apparent the nature of the little system we are constructing, that system of which each human unit is the central sun, for under the law of attraction he draws to himself that which he needs. 2. The nature of magic. Footnote. Magic. 1. Magic is a divine science which leads to a participation in the attributes of divinity itself. 2. All magical operations consist in freeing oneself from the coils of the ancient serpent. 3. The object of the art of magic is the perfection of man. 4. Magic explores the essence and power of everything. 5. Magic and magnetism are synonymous terms. 6. Magic is the sum total of natural knowledge. 7. Magic does not imply a transgression of the laws of nature. The basis of magic. 1. Magic is based on the inner powers in man's soul. 2. The trinity of nature is the lock of magic, the trinity of man the key that fits it. 3. Magic is occult psychology. 4. The astral light is the chief agent of magic. From Isis Unveiled and The Secret Doctrine, Volumes 1 and 2 by H.P. Blavatsky. Return to text. We have considered somewhat at length the building of thought forms and have seen that the process pursued by man is analogous to that pursued by the threefold logos in the creation of the solar system. We are to deal now with that great department in occultism which is usually termed magic. The man who masters the esoteric significance of what is here said will take his place in the ranks of those entitled to call themselves the brothers of white magic. The subject is too immense to be more than briefly touched upon, for it covers the entire range of endeavor in the field of material construction. Page 983. We must deal first with the mental attitude of man as he faces the work of creation, and his ability to bring through, via the mental body, the purpose of the ego, thereby impressing the building agents on the mental plane with a certain rate of rhythm and a certain vibratory activity. This is the prime factor which results, on the physical plane, in direct egoic activity. We must also bear in mind that in the consideration of this matter, we are not dealing with the everyday work of average man, but are speaking of the organized creative work, under law and rule, of the advanced man. We thereby set a standard and emphasize the ideal towards which occult students should strive. We must also consider the work of the wise magical student upon the astral plane, whereon, through purified desire and sanctified emotion, he provides those equilibrized conditions and those stable vibrations which will permit of the transmission without hindrance to the physical plane via the physical brain of the man, of the vibratory activity emanating from the ego and of the circulatory action of the higher force. Hence, if a remark of a practical nature may be interpolated for the average student, the cultivation of emotional tranquility is one of the first steps towards the achievement of the needed equipment of the white magician. This tranquility is not to be achieved by an effort of the will which succeeds in strangling all astral vibratory activity, but by the cultivation of response to the ego and a negation of all response to the inherent vibration of the astral sheath itself. We will take up the work of force transmission on the physical plane via the etheric centers and the physical brain, studying somewhat the effect of sound as it is emitted unconsciously in everyday speech and consciously in the ordered, regulated words of the true worker in magic. Footnote. Magic. The very word magic bears within itself proof of its high origin. The Latin magus, the Greek magos, a magician, gives us all those other words that are so indicative of authority, wisdom, superiority. Then we have magnitude, magnificent, magniloquent, to express greatness in position, in action, and in speech. With the termination slightly changed, the same words become majesty, implying dominion, and again we have magistrate, anything that is magisterial, which again has been simplified into master, and finally, by the process of word evolution, has become plain mister. But the Latin is only a transmitter of words. We can equally follow up the historical development of this root until we reach the Zend, where we find it doing duty as the name for the whole priestly caste. The Magi were renowned all over the world for their wisdom and skill in occultism, and no doubt our word magic is mostly indebted to that source for its present existence and meaning. That we need not pause even here, for back of the Zend, mag, looms up the Sanskrit maha, signifying great. It is thought by good scholars that maha was originally spelled magha, M-A-G-H-A. To be sure, there is in the Sanskrit the word maga, meaning a priest of the sun, but this was evidently a later borrowing from the Zend, which had originally derived its root from its neighbor, the Sanskrit. From Lucifer, volume 10, page 157. Magic, the art of divine magic, consists in the ability to perceive the essence of things in the light of nature, astral light, and by using the soul powers of the spirit to produce material things from the unseen universe, and in such operations the above and the below must be brought together and made to act harmoniously. Magic is the second of the four vidyas, and is the great maha vidya in the tantric writings. It needs the light of the fourth vidya, Atma vidya, thrown on it in order to be white magic. Black magic is defined by HPB as follows. A. Black magic employs the astral light for purposes of deception and seduction, whereas the white magician employs it for purposes of information and the aiding of evolution. B. Black magic works with opposing poles. The white magician seeks the point of equilibrium, or balance, and of synthesis. C. Black magic has for its symbol the inverted five-pointed star. White magic uses the same symbol with the point uppermost. D. Black magic is Mahavidya without the light of Atma Vidya. White magic is Mahavidya illumined by Atma Vidya. E. Black magic is ruled over by the moon. White magic is ruled over by the sun. F. Black and white magic arose during the Great Schism, which started during the Fourth Root Race. G. Black magic is based on the degradation of sex and of the creative function. White magic is based on the transmutation of the creative faculty into the higher creative thought, the generative organs being neglected by the inner fire, which passes to the throat, the center of creative sound. H. Black magic deals with the forces of involution. White magic works with the powers of evolution. I. Black magic is concerned with the form, with matter. White magic is concerned with the life within the form, with spirit. From The Secret Doctrine, volumes 1 and 2. Return to text. Page 984. In this connection, therefore, owing to the vital practical value of this section and to the dangers attendant upon a comprehension of these matters by those who are as yet unready for the work of conscious manipulation of force, it is proposed to impart the necessary teaching under the formula of rules of magic, with certain elucidating comments. In this way, the magical work is fully safeguarded, and at the same time sufficient is imparted to those who have the inner ear attentive and the eye of wisdom in process of opening. A. Black magicians and white. Much is said among occult students these days anent white and black magic, and much that is said is without force or truth. It has been truly said that between the two types of workers, the line of demarcation is so slight as to be difficult of recognition by those who, as yet, merit not the term knower. Page 985. The distinction between the two exists in both motive and method, and might be summed up as follows. The white magician has for motive that which will be of benefit to the group for whom he is expending his energy and time. The magician of the left-hand path ever works alone, or if he at any time cooperates with others, it is with a hidden selfish purpose. The exponent of white magic interests himself in the work of constructive endeavor in order to cooperate in hierarchical plans and to further the desires of the planetary logos. The brother of darkness occupies himself with that which lies outside the plans of the hierarchy and with that which is not included in the purpose of the lord of the planetary ray. The white magician, as has been earlier said, works entirely through the greater deva builders, and through sound and numbers he blends their work and thus influences the lesser builders who form the substance of their bodies, and therefore of all that is. He works through group centers and vital points of energy, and from thence produces in substance the desired results. Page 986. The dark brother works directly with substance itself and with the lesser builders. He does not cooperate with the forces which emanate from egoic levels. The lesser cohorts of the army of the voice are his servants and not the directing intelligences in the three worlds. And he therefore works primarily on the astral and physical planes, only in rare cases working with the mental forces, and only in a few special cases hidden in cosmic karma is a black magician found working on the higher mental levels. Yet the cases which are there to be discovered are the main contributing causes of all manifesting black magic. The brother of light works ever through the inherent force of the second aspect as long as he is functioning in connection with the three lower planes. After the third initiation, he works increasingly with spiritual energy or with the force of the first aspect. He impresses the lower substances and manipulates the lesser building lives with the vibration of love and the attractive coherency of the sun, and through wisdom the forms are built. He learns to work from the heart and therefore to manipulate that energy which streams from the heart of the sun until, when he becomes a Buddha, he can dispense somewhat the force emanating from the spiritual sun. Therefore, the heart center in the brother of the right-hand path is the transmitting agency for the building force, and the triangle he uses in this work is A. The center in the head which corresponds to the heart, B. The heart center itself, C. The throat center. The brothers of the left-hand path work with the forces of the third aspect entirely, and this it is which gives them so much apparent power, for the second aspect is only in process of reaching its vibratory consummation, whereas the third aspect is at the height of its vibratory activity, being the product of the evolutionary processes of the preceding major solar system. Page 987. He works from the throat center almost entirely and manipulates primarily the forces of the physical sun. This is the reason why he achieves many of his ends through the method of pranic stimulation or of pranic devitalization, and why also most of his effects are carried out on the physical plane. He works therefore through A. The center in the head corresponding to the throat center, B. The throat center, C. The center at the base of the spine. The white magician works always in cooperation with others and is himself under the direction of certain group heads. For instance, the brothers of the White Lodge work under the three great lords and conform to the plans laid down, subordinating their individual purposes and ideas to the great general scheme. The black magician usually works in an intensely individualistic way and can be seen carrying out his schemes alone or with the aid of subordinates. He brooks usually no known superior, but is nevertheless frequently the victim of agents on higher levels of cosmic evil who use him as he uses his inferior cooperators, that is, he works, as far as the bigger purpose is involved, blindly and unconsciously. The white magician, as is well known, works on the side of evolution, or in connection with the path of return. The black brother occupies himself with the forces of involution, or with the path of outgoing. They form the great balancing force in evolution, and though they are occupied with the material side of manifestation, and the brother of light is concerned with the aspect of soul or consciousness, they and their work under the great law of evolution contribute to the general purpose of the solar logos, though, and this is of tremendous occult significance to the illuminator student, not to the individual purpose of the planetary logos. Page 988. Finally, it might be briefly said in connection with the distinctions between magicians that the magician of the good law works with the soul of things. His brothers of darkness work with the material aspect. The white magician works through the force centers on the first and fourth subplanes of each plane. The black magician works through the permanent atoms and with the substance and forms concerned. The white magician utilizes in this connection the higher three centers. The black magician uses the energy of the lower three centers, the organs of generation, the spleen, and the solar plexus, synthesizing their energy by an act of the will and directing it to the center at the base of the spine, so that the fourfold energy is thence transmitted to the throat center. The white magician uses the kundalini force as it is transmitted via the central spinal channel. The black magician uses the inferior channels, dividing the fourfold energy in two units, which mount via the two channels, leaving the central one dormant. Hence it will be apparent that one works with duality and the other with unity. On the planes of duality, therefore, it is apparent why the black magician has so much power. The plane of unity for humanity is the mental plane. The planes of diversity are the astral and the physical. Hence, the black magician is of more apparent power than the white brother on the two lower planes in the three worlds. The white brother works under the hierarchy, or under the great king, carrying out his planetary purposes. The dark brother works under certain separated entities unknown to him, who are connected with the forces of matter itself. Page 989. Much more could be given in this connection, but what is here imparted suffices for our purpose. B. The source of black magic. In touching upon this point, we are trespassing into the realms of the mystery and the domain of the inexplicable. Certain statements can, however, be made here, which, if pondered upon, may throw a little light upon this dark subject. First, it should be remembered that the whole subject of planetary evil, and students must distinguish carefully between planetary and cosmic evil, lies hid in the individual life cycles and in the history of the great being who is the planetary logos of the earth. Therefore, until a man has taken certain initiations and thus achieved a measure of planetary consciousness, it is useless for him to speculate upon that record. HPB has touched in The Secret Doctrine upon the subject of the imperfect gods, and in these words lies the key to planetary evil. Second, it might briefly be said that as far as our humanity is concerned, the terms planetary evil and cosmic evil might be interpreted thus. Planetary evil arises from certain relations existing between our planetary logos and another planetary logos. When this condition of polar opposition is adjusted, then planetary evil will cease. The adjustment will be brought about through the mediation, occultly understood, of a third planetary logos. These three will eventually form an equilateral triangle, and then planetary evil will cease. Free circulation will ensue, planetary obscuration will become possible, and the imperfect gods will have achieved a relative perfection. Thus will the karma of the Manvantara, or secondary cycle, be adjusted, and so much planetary karmic evil be worked off. Page 990. All the above must be interpreted in its esoteric sense and not its exoteric. Cosmic evil, from the standpoint of our planet, consists in the relation between that spiritual intelligent unit, or Rishi of the superior constellation, as he is called, who is the informing life of one of the seven stars of the Great Bear and our planetary prototype, and one of the forces of the Pleiades. Students need here to remember that the seven sisters are occultly called the seven wives of the Rishis, and that the dual forces resulting from that relationship converge and play through one of the planetary Logoi, who is the logos of any particular planet and is the reflection of any specific Rishi. In this relation, at present lacking perfect adjustment, lies hid the mystery of cosmic evil as it makes itself felt in any particular planetary scheme. Again, when the heavenly triangle is duly equilibrated and the force circulates freely through A, one of the stars of the Great Bear, B, the Pleiad involved, C, the planetary scheme concerned, then again, cosmic evil will be negated and a relative perfection achieved. This will mark the attainment of primary perfection and the consummation of the greater cycle. Cyclic evil, or tertiary evil, lies hid in the relation between the globes in any particular scheme, two of them ever being in opposition until equilibrized by force emanating from a third. Students will only apprehend the significance of this teaching as they study the pairs of opposites in their own cycles and the equilibrizing work of the ego. A fourth type of evil, growing out of the above, finds its main expression in the sorrows and troubles of the fourth or human kingdom, and will find its solution in two ways: by the balancing of the forces of the three kingdoms, the spiritual or fifth kingdom, the human and the animal, and secondly, by the negation of the attractive power of the three lower kingdoms, the mineral, the vegetable, and the animal, who thus form one unit, by the spiritual kingdom, utilizing the fourth or human kingdom. Page 991. In all these cases, triangles of force are formed, which, when balanced, procure the desired end. Black magic is spoken of as making its appearance upon our planet during the fourth root race. It should be borne in mind here that this means strictly in connection with the fourth kingdom and its conscious use by wrongly developed men. The forces of evil of the planetary and cosmic kind have been present since manifestation set in, being latent in the karma of the planetary logos. But human beings began consciously to work with these forces and to use them for specified selfish ends in this round during the fourth root race. Black magicians work under certain great entities, six in number, who are spoken of, for instance, in the Christian Bible as having the number 666. They came in, being cosmic, not systemic, on that stream of force emanating from cosmic mental levels which produced the three worlds of human endeavor. Students should remember here the fact that the three lower planes of our solar system are not considered as embodying a cosmic principle, for they form the dense physical body of the logos, and the dense physical body is not considered a principle. There is an occult significance in the expression unprincipled. These entities are the sum total of the substance of the three lower subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, our three lower systemic planes, and it is under them that the black magicians are swept into activity, often unconsciously, but rising to power as they work consciously. Footnote. It might here be asked what, if any, relation there may be in this connection with the inner round. The inner round has many meanings, some impossible to give, but two things may here be said: that it concerns itself with the effect of the triangular balancing of forces towards the close of the cycle, when the force or energy involved is circulating unimpeded, even if slowly, through 1, 2 constellations of the solar system, 2, the planetary schemes, 3, three globes in the scheme. It should be remembered that all these three are interdependent. The force begins thus to flow when any cycle is two-thirds run. It deals with the greater initiations and is the correspondence on the higher planes to the occult shortcut to wisdom and knowledge, which we call the path of initiation. Return to text, page 992. In the early stages of human unfoldment, all men are unconscious black magicians, but are not occultly damned thereby. As evolution proceeds, they come under the force of the second aspect, and the majority respond to it, escaping from the meshes of the black magicians and coming under the force of a different number. The few who do not do so in this Manvantara are the failures who have to continue the struggle at a later date. A tiny percentage willfully refuse to pass on, and they become the true black magicians. For them, the end is ever the same. First, severance of the ego from the monad, entailing a wait for many eons until another solar system has its being. In the case of the failures, the ego severed itself from the personality or lower self, entailing a setback for a lesser period, but still having opportunity within the system. Second, a cycle of existence spent in unlimited evil and dependent upon the vitality of the severed egoic body and its innate persistence. These are the ordinary lost souls spoken of in the secret doctrine. Footnote: no soul can be lost where A. one good aspiration is present, B. one unselfish deed is done, C. the life is strong in virtue, D. the life is righteous, E. the life is a naturally pure life. From Isis Unveiled, Volume 2, page 368. Read also The Secret Doctrine, Volume 3, pages 528 and 529. Return to text. If students will study these conditions and will extend the same concept to an earlier and more matured solar system, they will get some light upon the problem of the origin of evil in this solar system. Page 993. C. Conditions for White Magic. In considering the factors requiring adjustment prior to undertaking the work of magic, we are dealing with that which is of eminently practical value. Unless students of magic enter upon this pursuit fortified by pure motive, clean bodies, and high aspiration, they are foredoomed to disappointment and even to disaster. All those who seek to work consciously with the forces of manifestation and who endeavor to control the energies of all that is seen need the strong protection of purity. This is a point which cannot be too strongly emphasized and urged, and hence the constant injunctions to self-control, comprehension of the nature of man, and devotion to the cause of humanity. The pursuit of magical investigation is dangerous in three ways. If a man's bodies are not sufficiently purified and their atomic vibration is not sufficiently high, he is in danger of overstimulation when brought in contact with the forces of nature, and this inevitably entails the destruction and disintegration of one or other of his bodies. At times it may entail the destruction of two or more, and when this is the case, it involves a definite setback to egoic unfoldment, for it requires, in such cases, a much longer interval between incarnations, owing to the difficulty of assembling the needed materials in the sheaths. Further, unless a man is strengthened in his endeavor by right motive, he is liable to be led astray by the acquisition of power. Knowledge of the laws of magic puts into the hands of the student powers which enable him to create, to acquire, and to control. Such powers are fraught with menace to the unprepared and unready, for the student can, in this case, turn them to selfish ends, use them for his own temporal material advancement, and acquire in this way that which will feed the desires of the lower nature. Page 994. He takes, therefore, the first step towards the left-hand path, and each life may see him progressing towards it with greater readiness until, almost unconsciously, he will find himself in the ranks of the black masters. Such a state of affairs can only be offset through the cultivation of altruism, sincere love of man, and a steady negation of all lower desire. The third danger which menaces the unwary student of magic lies in the fact that when he tampers with these forces and energies, he is dealing with that which is akin to his own lower nature. He therefore follows the line of least resistance. He augments these energies, thereby increasing their response to the lower and to the material aspects of his nature. This he does at the expense of his higher nature, retarding its unfoldment and delaying his progress. Incidentally, also, he attracts the attention of those masters of the left-hand path who are ever on the lookout for those who can be bent to their purposes, and he becomes, unwittingly at first, an agent on the side of evil. It will be apparent, therefore, that the student has need of the following qualities before he undertakes the arduous task of becoming a conscious master of magic. Physical purity. This is a thing not easily to be acquired, but entailing many lives of strenuous effort. Through abstinence, right continence, clean living, vegetarian diet, and rigid self-control, the man gradually raises the vibration of his physical atoms, builds a body of ever greater resistance and strength, and succeeds in manifesting forth in a sheath of greater refinement. Etheric freedom. This term does not convey all that I seek to impart, but it suffices for need of a better. Page 995. The student of magic who can safely undertake the enterprise will have constructed an etheric body of such a nature that vitality or pranic force and energy can circulate unimpeded. He will have formed an etheric web of such tenuosity that it forms no barrier to consciousness. This is all that can be said on this subject owing to the danger involved, but it suffices for the conveyance of information to those who are beginning to know. Astral stability. The student of magic aims, above all, to purify his desires and so to transmute his emotions that the lower physical purity and the higher mental responsiveness and transmutative power may equally be available. Every magician has to learn the fact that in this solar system, during the cycle of humanity, the astral body is the pivotal point of endeavor, having a reflex effect on both the other sheaths, the physical and the mental. He therefore aims at transmuting, as has often been said, lower desire into aspiration, at changing the lower, cruder colors which distinguish the astral body of average man for the clearer, purer tones of the spiritual man, and of transforming its normal chaotic vibration and the stormy sea of life for the steady rhythmic response to that which is highest and the center of peace. These things he effects by constant watchfulness, unremitting control, and steady meditation. Mental poise. These words are used in the occult sense, wherein the mind, as it is commonly understood, becomes the keen, steady instrument of the indwelling thinker, and the point from which he can travel onwards to higher realms of comprehension. It is the foundation stone whence the higher expansion can be initiated. Let not the would-be student of magic proceed in his investigations and his experiments until he has attended to these injunctions, and until the whole bent of his thought is towards their manifestation and their demonstration in his everyday life. Page 996. When he has so worked ceaselessly and untiringly, and his physical plane life and service bear witness to the inner transmutation, then he can proceed to parallel this life with magical studies and work. Only the solar angel can do the work of the white magician, and he effects it through the control of the lunar angels and their complete subjugation. They are arrayed against him until, through meditation, aspiration, and control, he bends them to his will, and they become his servants. This thought brings us to the vital and real distinction between the white brother and the brother of darkness, and in this summation we will conclude the present discussion and proceed with the rules. The worker in white magic utilizes ever the energy of the solar angel to effect his ends. The Dark Brother works through the inherent force of the Lunar Lords, which are allied in nature to all that is objective. In an old book of magic, hidden in the caves of learning, guarded by the Masters, are the following conclusive words which find their place in this treatise on fire through their very appropriateness. Quote, "The brothers of the sun, through the force of solar fire, fanned to a flame in the blazing vault of the second heaven, put out the lower lunar fires, and render naught that lower fire by friction. The brother of the moon ignores the sun and solar heat, borrows his fire from all that triply is, and pursues his cycle. The fires of hell await, and lunar fire dies out. Then neither sun nor moon avails him. Only the highest heaven awaits the spark electric, seeking vibration synchronous from that which lies beneath. And yet it cometh not." Close quote. End of side 2, cassette number 23, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 996. Continued on cassette number 24.